Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast Thursday show. We are coming out on Thursday, and that's how we came up with the name. I am Gary Gramling. She is Kaylin Kaler joining me this week. And Kaylin, since the NFL playoffs are basically over, I mean, the Bills are out. There's no reason for anyone to really be paying attention at this point. We're gonna look ahead to the draft a little bit. We're gonna talk some draft quarterbacks now that I feel like, and you can feel free to disagree with me here, but I feel like we kind of have the Big Six is now sort of declared.
Yeah, and I am really interested. This is like a fun quarterback class. Like last year's, you know, aside from Kyler, was a little boring. There wasn't a ton going on in terms of intrigue. But I feel like this year is kind of on the level of 2018 when we had five in the first round.
And that 2018 class was like, you had really unique guys. Like you had all the different flavors. Yeah. And I feel like you have a Lamar Jackson type in this class. We might not see a Lamar Jackson type again, for a long time. But you have six guys who are all pretty unique. If you're looking for certain things, you'll kind of find it in this draft. But what we're gonna do in this show, we're gonna run through these six guys. We're also gonna take a quick look at the teams who might be interested in them, some of the teams that really desperately need quarterback help, and then a few more who are kind of in the class of if they're wowed by one of these guys, they might snag one of them in April here. But we are going to start with the six, and let's start with a guy who just declared this week, and you and I talked about this pretty much for like all of last week. Was Tua going to be in or out? He is in, which
he's
I don't know. It was just kind of surprising because he did that like, hey guys, I'm going to announce it Monday, and it just felt like it was kind of like when LeBron did the decision, and it was kind of like, oh, he's just building it up so like they can have a big celebration in Cleveland or something, and then he was like, nope, I'm leaving. And Tua's not the same, because I'm sure everyone in Alabama is happy for Tua, and that program will be fine without him. But it just kind of felt like he was building up toward like, I got a big, big happy announcement for everyone, because, you know, I don't know, if you're not if you're just like a fan of NFL team, I guess a couple of fan bases might be happy, but I think most people were kind of bummed.
That was really a strange way that he did that, because there was no first of all, there's not really a precedent for his situation that he's in with his injury, and that the fact that he's injured really put a question mark. What was he going to do? And like all of last week, I was reaching out to different scouts that I know and different evaluators, different agents, and I'm like, does anyone know like what the hell he's going to do? And I assumed, you know, before he announced his decision date, like I'm going to declare on Monday, January 7th or whatever it was, before he announced that, I just assumed he was going to go to the league. Like that's the smartest choice. I didn't really think there was like a chance he was going to return. But once he announced that decision, I kept hearing from people like, oh, he's going back to Bama. He's going back. Yeah, he's definitely going to go back. And or maybe he'll declare for the supplemental draft if he has a change in circumstance with his injury getting, you know, showing improvement with the injury that was unexpected. So a bunch of people were telling me like, he's going back to Bama. And I was like, no, he is not. Like, I couldn't believe it, but I was getting it from people that were like, had credible information. So I think he personally wanted to go back to Alabama. Like if Tua was the only person making the decision, I think he might've gone back, but I think his family and whatever agent he's been talking to, I think it's Lee Steinberg's guy.
Yep.
Yeah, Chris Cabot, yeah. I think they got to him and talked some sense into him and were like, listen, you've got to go to the league. Like, you got to take the money now. And I think whatever medical checkup he had on Friday, I think it was positive. So that helped convince him of this is the right decision for me. So I think he wouldn't answer this question, but when they asked him in the press conference, but I think he had a change. I think he was going to go back and then changed his mind to go to the league after that most recent medical checkup. But yeah, as soon as Saban took the podium in that press conference, you knew he was leaving because he was like very somber and it was all about, you know, what Tua had contributed and what Tua meant to the program. And it was just obvious he was leaving. And at that point, it's like, why are we having this press conference? Like, yeah. Kyler Murray last year was just as scrutinized of a decision in a different way because he was choosing baseball or the NFL. But he was just as, like, public and crazy decision. And he just sent a one-sentence tweet. And that was how he chose football. So I don't know.
I don't like Twitter, but that's a really good use for Twitter. Just making that announcement and just being done with it.
Right.
Well, let's talk about where he is as far as what he's going to be able to do this draft season. He is obviously recovering from the dislocated hip. From all indications, it seems like he's going to be 100% at some point down the line here. Maybe even by the time next season kicks off.
Yeah, I think that's the sense that I'm getting because he said in his press conference he's optimistic that he would be able to play next season. And so for this injury, he said the 3-month mark and the 4-month mark are really important benchmarks as far as increasing his activity and sort of working back to normal football activity. He said he's been throwing sitting down. But he hasn't progressed to standing up or really like running or moving or anything yet. He didn't use his crutches for his press conference and looked like he was walking pretty good. So that was encouraging. But so the NFL Combine, the quarterbacks throw, I think that the Thursday or the Saturday of that week.
I have not looked that far ahead.
I looked that far ahead because I had to write about this earlier this week. And the day of the quarterback workout at the Combine, it's right in between his 3 and 4 month mark of that benchmark for rehab. So I would be shocked if he participated in that at the Combine. I think that would be pushing it for him to do really anything physically then. But after that, there is still plenty of time before the draft. You've still got basically 2 months after the Combine before the draft. So I think... you know, I think we could see him actually do some kind of physical workout to show teams what he can do, which my understanding, like teams would obviously feel a lot more comfortable about drafting him if they were able to see some kind of like physical proof, like, oh, yeah, he is moving pretty well for being in this stage of his rehab with that injury. So I think there is a chance that he will be able to actually physically work out for a team. And, you know, he wouldn't commit to that yet because he doesn't know enough. But I think that would be really important to helping teams feel more secure that, you know, this is going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Physically, he's lefty. That's exciting. We haven't had a lefty starting quarterback in a while. That'll be fun. But, you know, a smaller guy. He's, 6'1", I think, is what they listed him at Alabama. We'll see what he measures. That we get to do another measurement thing, just like Kyler last year, where get to tune into the Combine for that. But, 6'1", that makes things a little bit different. He doesn't have a howitzer of an arm. He certainly has enough arm strength for the next level. And it'll just be interesting what kind of, the geometry is different in the NFL. Everything is a little bit more condensed. Everything's in the center of the field as opposed to the collegiate level where you can sort of get outside and create some huge areas of space with the way the hash marks are set up on the field. But, he's athletic. He's incredibly accurate. Another one of the bigger questions. I mean, his receivers were so good at Alabama.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about them as draft season goes on. But you got Jerry Jeudy. Got a guy in like Henry Ruggs might be the first wide receiver off the board, even though he didn't have big numbers at Alabama, just because I don't know how well he meshed with Tua's arm as far as the downfield stuff went.
Yeah, and I think with Tua, I think he'll still be like the third quarterback, at least. He could be even higher than that. I just think based off of what we've seen from him, 3 seasons worth there, and I think if the medical reports come back positive, because it's going to come down to what every team doctor sees in their evaluation of him, and every team interested in him is going to do a very good, thorough medical exam of him, and they're going to kind of really lean off of whatever that team doctor says. And every time I asked like a scout or somebody, like, hey, like, you know, what do you think of Tua? Like, what do you think? Every single time they would just answer and be like, well, we're going to have to defer to the team doctor. Mm-hmm. So I think if those reports remain positive, I think he's still, you know, top three quarterback. I would be willing to bet he's going to be picked in the top 15, the top half of the first round. I just feel like the tape on him is going to be what, you know, pushes teams to take the leap of faith, if it even is one, to take him.
Well, let's go through the rest of these guys here. I think there's three who you could sort of argue are in the running for the number one pick. And certainly the front runner right mm-hmm. now is Joe Burrow out of LSU, who everyone will be able to watch Monday night in the national title game against probably the 2021 first overall pick in Trevor Lawrence. But Joe Burrow, it's funny. I think Dan Orlovsky had thrown this out in Andy Dalton comp, which obviously I have to think Bengals fans aren't crazy about that. I do think physically that comp is pretty accurate, probably. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of similarities. Probably, you know, when we get all the combine numbers, we'll see a lot of similarities to Dalton. Same as Dalton, doesn't have a huge arm, has a good arm, not great arm. But the thing with Burrow, I mean, look, Andy Dalton's sort of fatal flaw is, you know, in a muddy pocket, he melts down sometimes and just does crazy things with the ball. And Joe Burrow is kind of the opposite of that. He's so good when pressured. Andy and I used to talk about this on the show all the time. If you were sort of reverse engineering based on the great quarterbacks of the last decade, if you look at like Tom Brady and said like, okay, let's find a guy who has similarities to Tom Brady. I'm not saying Joe Burrow's next Tom Brady, but you'd say like, okay, subtle pocket movement, ability to play in a muddy pocket. I mean, everything in the NFL is a muddy pocket as opposed to some of the stuff you see on the college level. Burrow checks those boxes, so it's almost like he's Andy Dalton, but then Andy Dalton's greatest weakness is a strength for Joe Burrow.
Yeah, totally agree. And when I've been talking about Burrow with scouts, one thing that I thought was interesting that one pointed out to me was don't like miss the fact of how quickly Joe Burrow could be comfortable in a new offense and pick up a new offense and look like he's known it for years. Because Joe Brady, who is the passing game coordinator for LSU, who came from the Saints, he is new. Like, this is his first year there. And Burrow totally adjusted to that and adapted to it in a way that is really stunning when you look at it. Because, you know, we're constantly, when we're evaluating quarterbacks, we're constantly saying, oh, well, it's his first year in this system. Or, you know, he's learning a new, he's got a new coach. It's like, it's an excuse. And I think it's a valid excuse. Like, it's hard to learn a new offense. And it's hard to get adjusted to a new system as a quarterback when you're the one in charge. And so that was a point that a scout made to me is like, okay, yeah, everyone can see all the great things Joe Burrow is doing, but like, don't forget that he learned this all so quickly and picked it up so well. And one thing about Burrow that I just won't forget is I was at Manning Passing Academy in June, mm-hmm. which is an insane high school football camp put on by the Mannings. And it's just, they have like 27 football fields at this college in Louisiana. And there's like 1300 high schooler, middle schooler kids. And then there's like 42 starting college quarterbacks. It's just a scene that is, it's insane. It's just on a whole nother level. But anyways, as I was there, Archie Manning, I was riding around in a golf cart with him one morning, and he calls over some coach. I think it was like a high school coach who was helping out. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, I have a tip for you. And he's like, yeah? And he's like, Joe Burrow, he's going to be good this year. That was my Archie Manning accent, if you didn't pick up on that.
It was spot on. That was pretty good.
So, and then he goes on to be like, yeah, I saw him, you know, I saw him a couple weeks ago. I saw him in spring practice. Things have changed. Like this, he said last year, wouldn't have considered him an NFL quarterback. And he called this before the season. This was like 3 months before the season started. Like, he was on it. And he'd seen him. Joe Burrow was at Manning Passing Academy. So he had seen him throwing. He was watching him. And he was really impressed. And I kind of like filed that away. I'm like, okay, you know, let's see about this. Cause it's true. Like, after His first season at LSU, not really NFL quarterback, not a lot of people talking about him. But this year, he just emerges on the scene. And it seems like a lot of years there is that one guy who kind of rockets to the top out of nowhere almost. And that's Burrow this year.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a... Boy, it would. I mean, look, it's January, but it would be a surprise if he was not a Cincinnati Bengal when this was all said and done. But who knows? I mean, look. So we have Tua, we have Burrow, and then the third guy here is Justin Herbert out of Oregon, who sort of mildly surprised all of us last year when he ended up staying in school. But you went out to Eugene for a little bit, and you're sort of an honorary member of the Herbert family at this point.
Yeah, basically, you know. especially because of the ESPN clip where I was sitting next to Mark Herbert, his dad, and watching the game, and ESPN comes to the seats before the game starts, and they're like, "Hey, are you guys the Herbert family?" And I'm like, no, I am not. Please do not show me on camera. Please avert the camera. Go the other way. Of course, I make it on camera, and... Anyways, at least I wasn't stuffing my face with popcorn, which is like usually the case when I'm caught on screen.
That's the bar that is the bar you have to cross.
Right. Herbert is a really interesting quarterback to watch in this draft because I could definitely see him like sneaky rising to be the number one pick. It just depends on what the Bengals are looking for, or you know, if there's a trade for the number. Who knows if a team trades up? It just depends on who really falls in love with Herbert because where they're situated in the draft. Because, you know, physically, he's huge. He seems to see him as like your prototype size of a quarterback. They see him when you have someone like Tua who has gotten injured, you know, three times in college and maybe durability is a question. You can look at Herbert and say, okay, that guy is going to be able to take a hit. Like, that is a big quarterback. And I was talking to one scout who told me, you know, when he gets to the combine, he is really going to make an impression because of how large he is. When you see him in person, it's going to really leave a mark on scouts and evaluators because he is a really big, really big guy. And he's very athletic. He can run. He's fast. So this scout was saying, you know, once you see his numbers and his workout, his 40 time and everything, it's really going to help him rise after that point. He expected him, you know, to really kind of like shoot up people's boards after the combine because of the impression he'll make there.
Yeah, he's I know some people compare him to Josh Allen as sort of the, you know, obviously the physical traits, but also the fact that he sort of came out of nowhere to move into this like high first round conversation. And Herbert is not quite where Allen is as far as, you know, just the, you know, whatever 140 mile an hour fastball or whatever Josh Allen throws. Right. He also kind of reminded me of Allen situationally because look, that Oregon offense and Oregon, you know, all those Chip Kelly years, they sort of have this reputation of being this wide open, high scoring offense. They're not really that anymore. And what they did offensively this year was just kind of his weapons weren't great. And I think there is something to be said for what it does to a quarterback's accuracy and decision making when you have receivers who don't separate. I think that just makes their life very difficult and can make them look very bad. Now, I don't think Justin Herbert's going to, you know, go to the NFL and turn into Drew Brees as far as ball placement goes. But, you know, I think if you put him in a better offense with a better supporting cast, you will see sort of a jump here from him.
Yeah, I think so. And I think just based off of, you know, his personality, he decided to stay his senior year at Oregon, which, as you mentioned, was a little bit of a surprise. But I think it was a really good thing for him because scouts really value experience like that. That is really going to help. That's another thing that's really going to help him is he has 4 years of starting experience at Oregon. And he didn't have the same offense until his senior year. So as we're talking about with Burrow, like a new offense, like that was something that is kind of used with Herbert as like, look what he did. Even though he was trying to adapt to a new offense every year because they kept hiring a new offensive coordinator for him. So he didn't have that consistency until his senior year. So scouts kind of see him as a quarterback who really has room to grow and develop because he they haven't seen him, you know, play within the same system for enough time. But they really value his experience, because that starting experience in college is so important to how a college quarterback can develop and how quickly they transition to the NFL. But I think for him, just for personality wise, he is a quieter guy and he's been pretty sheltered because he's from Eugene. He went to Oregon. He hangs out at his parents' house a lot. Loser. Like, he just hasn't. I mean, he did a mission trip in Uganda. I know that. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't really experienced a lot else out there. So scouts always bring this up. And to be honest with you, I don't believe this is. I'm on a tangent now. I'm sorry. But I don't like this argument. To me, I never quite understand it. The whole like, oh, well, he couldn't go to New York thing, like because he couldn't handle the media in New York. People bring that up a lot when you talk about Herbert, because he is that quieter version of a leader. He is not that sort of like loud, confident, outgoing, extroverted quarterback. But I'm like, I don't know. Like every NFL team has media. Like, yeah, it's 2020. There's like 25 bloggers for every team. I don't know. I don't understand the argument of like, oh, well, he couldn't be a big market guy. But people always bring that up with him.
No, the New York thing is like, if you are a quiet guy, that almost works in your favor more.
I know.
Because it's like,
yeah.
I mean, what, you want to be Rex Ryan going out there? I mean.
Yeah. And that's what I don't understand. And I always flip it when people say that to me. I'm like, I honestly like do not believe in this argument. Like, any person could go to any market. Like, just don't be Mitchell Trubisky and turn the TV off. Like, it's just, you know, it's that simple. But yeah, so with Herbert, I think he would benefit from a situation where he can not have to start right away, where he can be behind a veteran. I mean, every quarterback would benefit from that. But I think him in particular would do really well if he goes to a team that does not need him to start day one and he can learn from somebody like a Philip Rivers or a Tom Brady or something like that. And then I think he will have a really successful NFL career. But that was kind of the sense I got from like talking to him and talking to a bunch of scouts. And the interesting thing about him too is that I know for a fact that the Giants loved him in last year's draft.
Yeah.
And obviously he didn't come out. So they were doing a bunch of work on him before he made his decision. Thinking that he would come out, they spent like 5 days in Eugene, which is a long time for a scout. They usually are in and out in like a day,
yep,
and at the most like a day and a half, even if they really like the guy. Like, they are, you know, they have their routine, they have their schedule, they're not hanging around. But they spent like 5 days out there really digging into him, and they really liked him. And who knows if they would have picked him over Daniel Jones, but they were very into him. So that makes me think that, you know, he'll probably be the second quarterback in this draft, if not the first. I think there is still a chance he could be the first quarterback.
All right, let's jump into the other three quarterbacks here that we'll call them at this time in January. What are we, like January 8th or something? We will call them the other three first round candidates, and we'll start with Jordan Love out at Utah State. You might not be familiar with him if you don't watch a lot of, I don't know when Utah State plays, Friday nights, probably. They played their bowl game really early on, I think. He is. I mean, look. You remember Week 16 Sunday night? Jenny and I talked about this on the Monday podcast after this, but NBC kept on running that sort of side by side highlight reel, like Mitchell Trubisky's best throws and then Patrick Mahomes' best throws and Collinsworth.
Yeah.
This guy, you know, they were trying to help Trubisky out a little bit and then just sort of be like, oh, look, I mean, you know, you take the high-end throws, these guys are pretty similar. You could probably do that with Jordan Love.
Yeah.
He's a big-time athlete. He's not a, you know, he's not like a sprinter type of guy, but, you know, like Mahomes, he's a guy who can make a lot of off-platform, you know, off-his-back-foot type of throws and just has, you know, pretty monstrous arm talent. You know, the issue is, and I think he had a bit of a disappointing year for a lot of people, and I think some people would maybe point to his supporting cast there. But I mean, look, he is a guy who can be molded, but the question is, you know, are you getting Are you getting Patrick Mahomes? Probably not. Are you getting sort of a Josh Allen type? Are you getting a Trubisky type? You could probably mold him a lot of ways, but can you get him comfortable enough in what you're doing at the NFL level? Because it just seems like it's going to take a year or two for him to sort of gain that consistency to be a guy you put on the field.
Yep, definitely. And he is one of the Senior Bowl quarterbacks, which include the group so far is Jalen Hurts, Jordan Love, and Justin Herbert, along with like Shea Patterson, but I'm not going to include him in this conversation. He's not worth my words right now. But I only bring that up because the Senior Bowl is going to be really important for him, for Jordan Love, I think, because, you know, I think he's, as we just kind of talked about, like, what is he really? Like, we're not sure. So that's really a good opportunity for him to show in practice. I think it's, who is it? The Lions and the Bengals, who are coaching the Senior Bowl this year, as well as like every team in attendance watching practice from the stands. So I think that's going to be a really good opportunity for him to get up and close and personal with NFL scouts and coaches, and for them to be able to work with him and see what's there with him. I think that week in Mobile will be really important to answering some questions about him and his draft stock.
And the other two here, we'll kind of lump them together because they were teammates together. Jacob Eason from Washington, who was the starter at Georgia until he was unseated by Jake Fromm. And these guys are you know, they both played at Georgia, but they're not very similar as quarterbacks. Right. Eason is your big armed sort of vertical downfield passing guy, whereas Fromm is kind of your you know, rhythm and timing and sort of a game manager type. And there's nothing wrong with that. People need to manage games sometimes, but I think that's what Fromm was on the collegiate level. And I don't think you'd expect him to be something different on the higher level of football.
Mm-hmm. Fromm is interesting because I talked to a scout at the Manning Passing Academy who was in love with Fromm, like loved him. And I think it was partially because of like his personality and his leadership, because he is one of those quarterbacks in this draft that has that, you know, intangible it factor. Which you can see just in his career, how he was able to win the starting job, you know, so many times and push out certain quarterbacks like Jacob Eason from Georgia. So I think that's kind of interesting about him. And, you know, so there's definitely interest in him. And I think he'll even be, just because quarterbacks rise in this draft, I would expect him to be like a late first round pick.
Yeah.
If not, I mean, early second round, but I think just because of the demand for quarterbacks and the paranoia that someone else is going to take the quarterback if you don't, I think he will go at the end of the first round, most likely. And then with Eason, I was talking to someone about Herbert, who was like, nah, I don't like Herbert. I love Jacob Eason. And they were like super into Eason. So he has his own fans in this draft, his own like super fan club. So that's kind of interesting too, because it seems like, you know, we know maybe who our top three are, but then after that, each guy does have their own sort of like super fans. And these two, the one who loved Fromm and the one who loved Eason, were different teams, two very different teams. So, but two teams that are both likely in the quarterback mix. So that was kind of interesting because, and the two teams that they were are teams that like could take a quarterback, but not definitely will take a quarterback. So if that was a late first round pick for either of them or an early second round pick, that would totally fit, because that would be kind of that area where late first round, early second round, you know, you might want to take a guy like that who you're like, yeah, I could use him for the future, but I don't need him right now.
Yeah.
Type of situation.
Yeah. No, it's like you said, it's really, you got such a variety this year. It's gonna be fun. I didn't think last year was a whole lot of fun. Once we knew Kyler was going number one, it was kind of a slog.
It was not fun.
Yeah,
it was only fun when Dwayne Haskins made his face when the Giants took Daniel Jones.
that was it. We waited the entire draft season for that moment.
He slightly scoffed. Slightly.
Yeah. Yep.
Ever so slightly.
It's a really interesting draft class. The reactionary positions, I mean, we've talked about this a lot on the show over the last couple of years. Reactionary positions, offensive line and defensive back. Got a lot of good guys coming up this year. I mean, this is the first time in I don't know, my lifetime that I can ever remember saying, like, oh, this is a deep offensive line class coming out. You need offensive line help, you finally might get some. And y'all will see how these go. It all goes. And then Chase Young. Chase Young's probably your top overall
Chase
guy.
Chase Young.
We have plenty to talk about as draft season fires up. We are going to hold off until after the playoffs with that. But before we wrap up this show, let's just look at some of the teams that need these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you this list, Kaitlin, and you can disagree, you can agree. I listed six teams in the need a QB list, and then I listed, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 teams in the if they're wowed by one of these guys. I could definitely see them mm-hmm. scooping up one of these quarterbacks. But the first one, and obviously it's the Bengals, and they will pick first. They will pick 33rd at this point. You know, 4 months away, we expect them to take Joe Burrow first overall, or maybe one of those other quarterbacks, but certainly using that number one overall pick on a quarterback.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I think that's clear as day.
The Dolphins, the tank for Tua Dolphins, as we knew them back in September, they loaded up on early picks here. They have the Steelers and the Texans picks. The Steelers, we know, will be the 18th pick, and the Texans will be somewhere in the late 20s since they're still alive in the playoffs. And then the Dolphins also will pick 39 in the second round there. So if they want to jump up, if they want to jump up to like
they
number
could.
Two or something, they definitely have the ammo to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, I would if I had my druthers, I would say Joe Burrow at one to the Bengals, the Dolphins scoop up Justin Herbert, and then the Chargers, who pick six, end up getting themselves Tua. I don't know what's gonna happen with Phillip Rivers here, but I think Phillip Rivers, if you had him behind an offensive line, could probably still keep you going a little bit, and then you got your you know, kind of like when Rivers was behind Breeze, you got your guy for a year or two down the road.
I mean, I feel like the Chargers like have to pick a quarterback this
year. Yeah,
I mean, if they want a situation where they can like develop a guy and like not, you know, hurry him out there, like this is the year.
The kind of tragic part with the Chargers is you keep on looking at them and being like, you didn't take a quarterback, but also since you didn't take a quarterback, how do you have so little depth? Like how
right?
How
is Why your are you not so better? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a confusing one.
The Panthers picking 7 gonna be fed. It seems like it's gonna be like a pretty much a full reset with Matt Rhule coming in.
Right.
We'll see what happens with Cam. I've been shouting at people on the streets that Cam is the starter in Carolina in 2020 and not Kyle Allen. But I mean, hey, can you really look at Cam and say this guy's gonna be our guy in 5 years, considering what's happened to his body durability wise?
Right. Totally. I still want Cam to like go sign somewhere else, like Chicago.
I was gonna say, I know where you want him to sign.
But honestly, like, not to jump to the Bears here, but they are in such a weird spot right now because they need to do something. They have to do something to pretend like they're trying to improve the quarterback position. But the fact that they fired like 3 offensive coaches makes me think that they are not admitting that Mitch Trubisky is the problem. Like, they've already like fired people as scapegoats, which makes me then think they aren't going to do anything about it. Like, maybe they will draft a late round, mid round quarterback, but I can't imagine they're going to, well, they don't have a first round pick, so that's not really an option. I just can't imagine they would take or even like sign a veteran that might be competing with him, because he can't, I don't think his psyche can handle a quarterback competition. And then to introduce that, like even just to introduce like, oh, we have this backup. Well, he's not really a bad, like, you know, if you bring in someone who like Cam Newton or somebody else who is like literally going to directly compete with Mitch, it's just going to open up to so much stuff among the media and the fans that I just don't think they are interested in that at all. And so I don't know what they're going to do.
I mean, they've been so kid gloves with him, even with the play calling late in the season. Even when they were their season was over, they were still really. I mean, it was you know, confidence builder type throws, everything behind the line of scrimmage type of stuff. But they don't, as you said, Kalen, they don't have the first round pick because of the Khalil Mack trade. They do. This is the year they get a second rounder back from the Raiders as part of that trade, which was just really weird. But they'll they'll pick 43. They'll pick 50. I think if Ryan Pace tries to trade up again, someone's going to I don't know, cut the phone lines there or something. Like they gotta stop him from doing that. But I'll just say this about Trubisky, and I feel like I was I was the first one to start sort of bashing him a little bit, but weird things can happen with quarterback. I mean, Drew Brees, three years into his career,
you
would have said this is the worst starting quarterback in football, and just sort of click for it. You know, Rich Gannon, Steve Berline, these guys who sort of blossomed in their 30s and into not only like starting quarterbacks, but like really good starting quarterbacks. Rich Gannon was like a 37-year-old MVP. So I wouldn't completely write off Trubisky, but at the same time, it's like you just haven't seen anything that would make you say, like,
no,
this might turn around.
No, and if they want to work there after next season, like, I think what will happen is they're going to commit to Mitch for another season. He'll probably not play well again, and they're going to miss the playoffs again. And then they're all just going to be fired because they're all tied to him, like, no matter what. And the only way they could get out of not being tied to him is if they bring in another quarterback who would help them win next season and would be and could beat Mitch in a job. But I just don't think they want that. I don't think they want that situation because I think they're not ready to move on from him. I don't think they're like in a place where they're going to make that decision. So I don't know what it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think they'll take one of the rookies here. I think that sort of is, you know, if they bring in a guy, it will be a veteran. But, a little sunk cost fallacy at work, which at the same time, I mean, you have a defense. You have a champ. It's a lot more difficult to build a championship caliber defense because that takes a lot of parts. That takes hitting on a lot of picks. And like that window is open now. I feel like, you know, whatever you can, who knows, Bengals could be opening a window by just drafting Joe Burrow first overall here in this draft. And by the way, Joe Burrow gets Jonah Williams back next year. Their first round pick from last season. So maybe they won't be as much of an abomination on the offensive line. Maybe things start to turn around a little bit for the Bengals. The sixth team I had was the Patriots who will pick 23 because they, if you didn't hear, they lost last week in the playoffs and now they are locked in. They'll pick 23 and you know, obviously, I don't know what Brady. I still think Brady's going back, but even if he does, at some point, I mean, they've already done it a couple times. You probably got to do it again. Now you got to find who your next guy is going to be.
Have we completely written off Jarrett Stidham?
We shouldn't. Because, you know, as you know, we remember all the talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, like his first year and he was terrible in practice and all this stuff and he was going to be a bust, et cetera, et cetera. Stidham, the only action we really saw from Stidham this year was when he went in during that Jets game early in the season. It was one of the Luke Falk Jets games Stidham went out and like threw a pick six and like immediately got yanked again. They put Brady back in and it was kind of like, this isn't going very well for them.
Right. Yeah, I haven't done like any reporting on Stidham, but so I honestly know nothing more than anyone else would about him. But it would be interesting to know, and they would never say, but it would be interesting to know like what they think of him internally there, because I mean, obviously, whatever they do think of him would directly impact how they're going to view quarterbacks in this draft. And I just don't know the answer to that, but I think that would be really interesting to find out what they see, if they see any potential in him to be that next guy for them, or if he's just kind of a backup level quarterback in the future.
And I'll just I'll rapid fire the nine that I put in the if they're wowed by a guy. We have the Jaguars who they pick nine, and then they have the Rams 20th pick. I mean, look, they have Minshew. They owe Nick Foles a lot of money and can't really get out from under that contract. It would take an Osweiler type of, Osweiler to the Browns type of deal with someone to get out from under that. So I don't think they bring in another quarterback at this point. But who knows? You know, you love one of these guys, you go and get them. The Raiders, who a lot of us were kind of hearing whispers that, like, Gruden wasn't crazy about Derek Carr. I thought Derek Carr was excellent last year. I thought he was really good. Look, they have the two first-round picks. They pick 12. They pick 19. And I guess you're never shocked by anything John Gruden might do. But the Colts, I know Colts fans are ready to move on from Jacoby Brissett. I don't think Frank Reich is, and I think Frank Reich is right, but they do pick 13, they pick 34, they have a pick from Washington from a first round trade last year. They go 13, 34, and 44, so if they wanted to get one of these guys, they probably could. Bucks at 14, who knows what they do with Jameis. Saints at 24, it sounds like they're probably going to bring Teddy Bridgewater back to be sort of the heir apparent to Breeze, but we'll see what happens there. And then a couple teams are still alive, the Titans and Vikings in the late 20s. Titans might franchise Ryan Tannehill. Vikings, next year will be their last year of that fully guaranteed Kirk Cousins contract, so we'll see. I don't know if they want to bring in a guy and sort of go cheap after that.
Yeah, Titans are fascinating because I heard in the summer that they were closely scouting this quarterback class, particularly looking like, they at the time they were like, we're going to be a playoff team. And I was like, interesting, but they were right. So they kind of were banking on they're going to be a later first round pick is what they were sort of expecting and what they were kind of scouting for this season. So I would not be surprised if they pick a quarterback. However, this was before Ryan Tannehill emerged, so that may have changed their perspective on things, but I wouldn't be surprised if they went for one.
I know the Tannehill thing is wild because Tannehill's performance, he was tremendous. I mean, and he completed a lot of throws that he didn't complete very often for the Dolphins. He was just a completely different quarterback, and they have to kind of decide, like, was this like just a hot streak, just a small sample size kind of hot streak here, or is this a guy we can win with next year? I think they just end up franchise tagging him and going from there. But I'd be really surprised if they were going to make a long term commitment to Tannehill at this point, unless it was a very team friendly contract. The last two teams I listed were the Packers, who picked 30, and the Steelers, who traded their first rounder to Miami to get Minka Fitzpatrick. They pick at 49. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the Steelers. I mean, look, Roethlisberger, if his elbow is healthy, is obviously the starter next year. He'll be a 38-year-old coming off a major elbow injury. So I don't think they are going to have anyone necessarily to challenge Roethlisberger. But I think what you saw from Mason Rudolph this year, it might be time to sort of, think about someone else as your quarterback of the future. I mean, they didn't make a huge investment. We've seen plenty of third-round picks over the years. Garrett Grayson comes to mind. The Saints picked Garrett Grayson third round a couple years ago and just never put him on the field. I think the Steelers could be in on, let's say Fromm or Eason or something ends up slipping into the middle of round two. Maybe they scoop up one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Jordan Love.
That's what we got. That's everything. I'm sure nothing will change between now and April, so you can just keep on replaying this episode every couple of weeks to remind yourself of exactly what's going to happen with the quarterback class.
There will be no updates.
Kaylin, thanks for joining us. I know you're out in Green Bay on the road here reporting some stuff.
That's right. Packers, it's interesting things happening in Packerland this week, gearing up for another ugly win.
Yeah,
as
it looks
Rogers
like
Rodgers would say.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, enjoy that, and I hope everyone enjoys the playoff action this weekend. And we got plenty more. We did plenty of coaching carousel stuff on the shows behind us, the Weekside podcast with Connor and Jenny and Albert show, and we'll be handicapping the playoff action on the MMQB Gambling Podcast, which we tape tomorrow. Comes out Friday. That's how podcasts works. You gotta tape them first. They're not live. But The MMQB NFL Thursday podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Thanks to Kaylin Kaler for joining us this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.